going to try to finish up the discussion of commands. And when I look at commands, I kind of set this up as looking at several things to remember about commands that will, in one way or another, help us to have a better handle on commands. So we talked about caveat number one. Commandments are not isolated data points that we just combine at will. You have to look at all of the information about a given subject. Second thing to be aware of, commands can be stated either positively or negatively, and if it's negatively stated, then there is a temptation to say everything that's not forbidden by that specific negative statement is okay. And we looked at some examples of that. Commandments have an object. In other words, they could be for individuals. They could be for churches. They could be for a group of individuals within a church. But commandments typically have an object associated with them. So you can't take a commandment that's given to one object or one individual or group of individuals and say that it applies to another object. So you can't take commandments that are given to individuals and apply them to the church necessarily. And we talked about commandments can be generic, and generic commandments are commandments that can be kept in more than one way, or they could be specific commandments that you can only keep in one way. So if the commandment is generic and there are multiple ways of keeping the commandment, then the discussion that we would have about the commandment revolves around, well, what's the most effective way to keep the commandment? Or what's the way that that suits your skill set? But that's a different kind of discussion than we're going to have if we're talking about specific commandments, because then there's only one way of keeping it. So we don't talk about what's the best way. When we're talking about generic commandments, we can talk about what's the best way to keep it. And we ended up last week talking about virtually assembling. And I think that's one of those things where we do talk about what's the best way to assemble. And it makes some sense to me that the best way to assemble is to do it in person. But it's not, I conclude that it's not the only way to do it. It's just maybe the most beneficial way. But I don't think we're violating the commandments if we do it virtually. There is some sense in looking at what's the best way to do it. Okay? Or what works best for us. And what works best for us living in Eugene, Oregon, may not be what works best for someone who lives in Istanbul, you know, somebody who lives in a completely different circumstance than we do. Okay? So, any other thoughts about those kind of things to keep in mind? If not, we'll go on.
We ended last week with Kim asking something and you saying that we would start with that this week. Do you remember what that was? Do you remember that? You don't remember that?
I don't.
I don't remember what it was. I just remember it.
Well, it became a mouth that was very profound.
It was. It was.
But I do not have a clue.
Okay.
Well, I thought that was what we ended on, was the discussion of assembly and what is the best way to do it.
That was our last discussion, but then she brought up a point and we were out of time and you said we'll start with that next time.
I should have written it down. Yeah,
that's okay.
My brain leaks.
I should have written it down too.
That's okay.
Okay.
Can we go back just for a minute? And so some of the, because I think that this is a command, but I think it's a specific command that's given to women in the New Testament. And that is to dress modestly, to dress, you know, to adorn themselves and you know, and have a meek and gentle spirit. I think that that's directed, but that doesn't mean that men can be immodest, you know, for example.
Yeah, right.
But, and then I think that another specific command that's given just to men is to be the provider in their family. But that doesn't mean that women can't participate in that and do that as well. But that is a commandment that is given to the man, is to take care of his family. So I just wanted to, so even the church as a group, there are subgroups of people, children, obey your parents and the Lord. You know, well, in some ways we're all children. And honor your father and mother. That doesn't go away when you're grown up. You know, you still need to honor your father and mother. But that presumes that you are a child, right? That you have a father and a mother. You know, you're not an orphan. So anyway, so I think there are some specific commandments that are given to subsets of people. And I just wanted to sort of bring that up.
That's a good point.
But I'm not saying that the command that we have liberty to sort of extend those commands outside of the group. But I'm sure that modesty, for example, is dealt with in other places. So to say that a woman has to dress modestly, but a man doesn't have to.
I think that would be a mistake.
I think it would be a mistake. Anyway. I just thought.
Well, that's a good point.
It gets kind of goofy that way.
That's a good point, and we'll talk about that kind of as the last point that we'll make, because there are commandments that are given, for instance, in the Old Testament, and you think, okay, what does that mean to me? What am I supposed to learn from a commandment that's given in the Old Testament that was a part of the law that was given at Sinai that didn't even apply to the Gentiles? Mm-hmm. So, you know, how am I supposed to learn? And should we expand those those commandments beyond the circumstance in which they originally occurred?
Well, I'm sure you'll get to it, but I, you know, there's a difference in commandment and principles. So, I mean, I think that God puts forth some principles, like modest, to adorn yourself modestly. Those are some general principles that people need to abide by. But he didn't specifically call out anyone but women in the New Testament. So, but there are principles. There's principles of honesty. There's just some general principles that are given that I'm not sure are necessarily commandments. Honesty is probably not the best example, but I think that there are some general principles that we live by, which gets back to the generic one, to let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel. That could just involve so many things. So living in a worthy manner, that's loaded, because, you know, none of us are worthy of salvation. None of us are worthy, whatever that means. So this has to have a little bit slightly different meaning to it. but we're trying to live a worthy, to represent Jesus Christ. Well, that can, you know, be just our personalities. It's going to look a little bit different, and the way that we approach our life and the way that we do it, but because it's a generic principle and commandment.
Okay. I really have never considered the distinction between a principle and a commandment. It's an interesting discussion, and it's one we ought to have, and I just never thought about it.
Well, one that I think about is thou shalt not kill. That was a commandment that was given on Sinai as part of the law. That really isn't repeated in the New Testament. It's just a given. It's a given principle that people live by. I can't think of a time in the New Testament where that commandment is explicitly given.
Okay.
But I think the principle of valuing human life and honoring and respecting one another and not going around killing people is there.
Okay. So we'll talk about that idea as we kind of conclude this. Here's warning number five, and it's kind of related to some of the other things that we've been talking about. Some commandments are for a particular time or setting or persons or even purpose. Okay? Sometimes it's explicitly stated. The commandment to keep silent in the churches is a commandment that's given to women in that setting. So if you go outside of that setting, you can't use that commandment to tell you how to behave outside of that setting. So to say women keep silence in the churches, I think, is a modifier that tells us the setting in which this is the commandment. Outside of that setting, I think it may be a different issue. It's like if you go outside of that setting into the marketplace and the woman owns a business, I don't think it applies to say women should keep silent.
I have heard Christians make the argument that this principle does apply where a woman could not be a supervisor of a man. I think that's a misapplication, but that's where I've heard people make that argument.
Yeah, I have too. And I think that's not respecting the fact that the commandment was given in a particular setting.
The setting being in the churches.
Right.
Meaning
in my, given the context there in 1 Corinthians, he's talking about in the assembly.
Okay, which part of the assembly?
Any part of the assembly.
The class part of the assembly?
I don't think the commandment to keep silence is an indicator that you should not speak. I think it's an indicator to speak within the position that you find yourself.
Well, it says they are not allowed to speak.
Yeah, I realize that, not to speak and to keep silence in the churches. But if it meant keep silence in the church and you cannot speak, then you can't sing either. If we were to understand silence the way we sometimes understand silence, then you couldn't sing. So I think it's a special case of silence, and the silence is respecting the authority of your husband in that setting. If anyone has a question, let them ask their husbands at home. So
give me an example of women should remain silent in the churches. Give me an example. Like, are you talking about like while you're preaching, while I'm at the Lord's Supper? I mean, what specifically is remaining silent in the churches to you?
If we look at this in the overall, the situation seems to have arisen there where you had women who were calling down their husbands in the churches, in the assemblies. They were asking questions for the purpose of refuting what their husband was saying.
So where do you...
I would have to put together all of the different passages that talk about that kind of setting. In that group, I would include usurping authority. Women speak a lot of times when there's no authority associated with it. People speak when there's no authority associated with it. So this is, in my mind, this is a situation where it's the woman being in a position of authority. And if there's no authority associated with it, then like we sing, okay? But the fact that I sing doesn't mean that I have any authority in that singing. I'm joining in as opposed to exercising a position of authority.
So when we have our classes and we're answering questions or reading scripture, that's a different thing. Because sometimes during our classes, if the women didn't speak up, nobody would.
Well, that's
but
true.
The man that's teaching.
That's true.
We have to realize that they probably didn't have Bible classes. Our format is probably very, very different than theirs. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you go back to the context, starting in verse 26, where people are prophesying, that it almost seems like, as he's talking to them, that things are being done so disorderly that people are talking over one another. Women were probably prophesying. They were kind of probably talking over one another, and things were not done in order. The whole line of authority was getting goofed up, and I think that's where he's kind of reminding everybody, really, what God had intended for the assembly, what it needs to look like, and it needs to be done respectfully and orderly. And it looks like they were interrupting each other right and left. In verse 28, if there's no interpreter, the speaker should keep quiet in the church and speak to himself and God. So, and that's a male speaker. That's telling you
right.
Keep quiet too. You know, if they're talking over one another, it would appear. And then you've got two or three prophets speaking. They're not weighing out what they're saying. They're just, you know, and so he's basically saying, take a step back and everybody calm down and do this orderly, in an orderly fashion.
Yeah.
Keeping in mind, really, who you are.
I get the impression that their time to think about different parts of biblical information was more of a discussion anyway. I don't think it looked like a sermon.
Right, yeah.
It talks about...
We got to remember that back in the first century, they didn't have Bibles.
Well, that's true.
And they were using... The Gentiles were unfamiliar with the Old Testament. So the the Jews who had the knowledge were sharing what they knew with Gentile Christians.
Okay.
And
that's a good point.
And they
may have been reading letters that came from one of the apostles.
Exactly.
So
that's the information they have.
Well, and I think there were prophecies in tongues. And in 1 Corinthians, I think that his letter to the church is really trying to clarify that things be done respectfully and honoring one another. Because remember, they were saying, oh, I'm so special, and I've got this gift, and so-and-so has that gift, but my gift is better than their gift. And, you know, so there was a lot of kind of posturing and that kind of thing. And yeah, they were probably, as humans do, because they didn't have what we have, the written word in front of us, is there were prophecies, and they were probably just grasping and trying to understand this. And you've got to give them credit for that. But,
exactly. I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah, but how frustrating it must have been, and how, you know, I mean, even sometimes we have a hard time, you know, if we have a disagreement in particular, not talking over one another. And I mean, I don't think that we do it in our assembly and stuff, but human nature, human beings do that.
Sure.
And we don't stop and step back and listen respectfully to what the other person is saying and show them honor. And I think that the church in Corinth was really struggling with that. If you read the entire letter, the 1 Corinthian letter, Paul is really trying to get them to look beyond themselves. It was very self-serving.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And sorry, that was kind of off topic.
No, that's okay. And I think we also have to understand that sometimes commandments were given for a specific purpose. Look at 1 Corinthians 16 at verse 2. And this is the purpose part of this is something that we don't talk about very much. 1 Corinthians 16:2. Somebody want to read that?
On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made.
Okay. So what's the purpose for assembling this money in the first place?
To lay by in store in case.
It was for the needy saints.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. It's for the saints in Jerusalem. Okay. So that's what they were doing. That's kind of,
to get that.
Yeah, that's kind of an understood part of this, but the purpose for doing it in a distributed way, let everybody lay by in store on the first day of the week, is so that there be no gatherings when I come. So Paul is going to come through. His purpose was to go through the town, pick up the funds, and continue on to Jerusalem. So we don't talk very often about that part of this. That was the reason for doing this. If the reason isn't there, then what happens to the commandment that was in the first place?
So is this the verse that we use for giving every Sunday?
Well, that's not the verse that I use.
That's
but,
what I remember talking to you about. That's why I asked.
Yeah, it's not the verse that I use, but it is the verse that is frequently used to make this a commandment to me to lay by in store on the first day of the week.
This is not the verse.
I don't think that verse talks about it.
Okay.
And that the you know, if you take in the overall, I think the best approach is whenever there's a need, meet it.
Again, that's the principle.
Yeah, okay, a principle. I think it's a commandment. That was what happened in the first part of Acts. There were people that didn't have enough to eat, and so some people sold their land and brought the money to the apostles. I'm not going to say that they had to do that on the first day of the week. Nor would I say that they had to apportion that out so that they gave some each week. Okay? If you sold your land and the need was there, you brought it to the apostles on Thursday afternoon when the house closed.
Can I ask, I don't want to get off topic, but what verse do you use for giving on Sunday?
I talk about the general principle. The only way that we meet the needs that we have is through the free will contribution of our members.
But you don't believe it has to be every Sunday?
Not based on this passage, no. And I don't think that it necessarily has to be every Sunday.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, I do think that the way that we meet the need is through the free will contribution of our members, and an expeditious time to do that is when we're together, okay? But again, this gets back to, in the first century, if I wanted to put funds into a common treasury, I probably had to go there. You know, the whole idea of the banking system and the ability to move around funds didn't occur until the Crusades, okay? You couldn't write a check back then. So if you if you were going to contribute to the general treasury, you would do that when you came together. So that was the way you got your money there. So today we can do it with Zelle. So I don't have to do it this way. But I do need to recognize the commandment to meet the needs that we have through the free will offering of our members. So, and in some cases, that need is massive and it's immediate. I'm thinking back when Alaska was devastated in 1964 by the earthquake. People lost their homes. They didn't have a place to get shelter. And this was in the winter. Okay? So the word went out, we need tents and blankets and stuff to cook with. And the church in Anchorage was inundated with that stuff. Okay? And people took other people that had lost their houses into their homes and said, stay here. And they did it. And the earthquake, in some ways, fortunately, happened on Good Friday. So there weren't a lot of people in businesses downtown. And the downtown area was just devastated. So they were fortunate, but the need arose. They needed stuff on Saturday. They didn't need to wait till Sunday for somebody to say, well, I can contribute on Sunday. So I find it interesting that we don't give as much emphasis to the second part of 1 Corinthians 16:2 as we do the first part. Because Paul says, do it this way so that when I get there, I pick it up and keep going.
That same principle can apply, for example, and it's not nearly as dramatic as a devastating earthquake or anything like that, but you know, I mean, we have maintenance needs here, and suddenly something may happen to our roof and you know, catastrophic damage. And so we have wisely have a small pot of money set aside, or some money that people have contributed, to meet an immediate need like that. Now, I'm not saying that you would amass a huge savings account or anything like that, but in order to meet a need, and there might be a more pressing need or a different kind of a need. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be quite as dramatic as something like that,
yeah.
but needs come up. And so in the way that we're structured as a church, there's always going to be a need. There's always going to be a need. So I think the principle of setting aside on a regular basis and the first day of the week is a good time to do that, because we are meeting a need, and you don't want to wait until the need arises, until Paul comes through town, to take up a collection. You want to have it ready for him, or ready for the roof, or ready for the parking lot, or ready for whatever comes up.
Okay, so this incorporates the principle of budgeting.
This incorporates the principle, and that's what he was saying, basically.
But it still says on the first day of the week.
Yeah.
So that's hard for me to get past. It says on the first day of every week that each one of you put aside and save as he may prosper. So that, I don't know.
But you got to consider the end of the verse, so that won't be gatherings when I come.
Yes. That's all one thing, yes.
Okay.
But it still is saying the first day of the week.
But Paul's not going to come through here and gather funds for Jerusalem.
Yeah, I think
So I think this is addressing those people at that time.
Yeah.
Well, the people like us, members of this congregation, that's what it seems like to me. It's addressing the people that are in that certain congregation.
Agreed.
And then it's, so the collections are there when Paul comes. I understand that. So, okay. I guess one thing we'll disagree to.
I think we're all in agreement. I just think that...
Yeah, if the situation... If you don't have a situation where you need to have the money there on a certain day, Paul comes through and he goes.
Yes, right.
Then you don't have to build up this pot of money to have it ready for Paul to get there. Then you can respond to needs more immediately because it happens locally.
Well, yes, I understand that part too. The money is there for whenever it's needed.
Right. It's a good thought. It's a good thought. And those are the kinds of things that we struggle with.
Yes.
You know, to say that there's a commandment to lay by and store on the first day of the week isn't as nuanced as it is written in the Bible.
But how do we know that? I mean, how do we know it's not that important if it says it?
Well, we know that the "so that" is there to explain the first part of the verse. And it is a "so that."
But it doesn't mean that that's not important.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's not important. It just means it's a "so that." This is why you're doing this.
Well, now going back to the women in Silas, for some reason I have this note written that I wrote, and verse 34 saying, I wrote wives of the prophets. So somewhere in some class, somebody must have suggested that they think these women that they're talking about there that need to keep silent were the wives of the prophets.
Probably. I think that's the situation where they're calling down their husbands.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, that's the one that I have a hard time with. I just, you know, reading back through it and everything, it says women. It doesn't say women of the prophets. It doesn't say anything like that. And then toward the end it says, for it is disgraceful for a woman to speak in the church.
right, in the church. But it's not saying it's disgraceful for a woman to speak.
Well, I know. I'm not talking about in the church.
Right.
Yeah, mine says
church.
Improper for a woman to speak in church. That's how mine works.
Right.
So I don't know if we can, in the church. I guess I'm stuck on in the church. To me, in the church would be in the assembly. And we
so then you get a discussion about, is this an assembly?
We're assembled together.
Well, okay, but I'm just saying, is this an assembly? What about the situation where you have a group of people that meet together in a particular location? They're the church in that place, and they don't have elders. So how do they conduct themselves deciding what they're going to do?
As any church would without elders. I grew up without elders.
And what did they do?
The men that were there discussed things and decided what to do.
So at that point, is it an assembly or is it a discussion about what we're going to do that is not part of an assembly? That's just that's a conundrum for me, because we've always said if you don't have elders, then you have to have business meetings. I don't see a business meeting anywhere in the New Testament.
I haven't looked, but I've never heard of one.
I've looked. I don't find a business meeting. And he says in 1 Corinthians 5, he says, when you come together to deliver such a one unto Satan, they came together to do that. It wasn't a decision that a group of people made. It wasn't even a decision that the elders made and then told everybody about it. It was when they came together, they delivered this one to Satan. Yeah.
When we look at the context of 1 Corinthians and what Paul was dealing with the church in Corinth, go all the way back to chapter 11, and he says, I mean, he's talking to them repeatedly about their conduct in worship and their conduct with one another, and he's talking about the proprietary, the way that you conduct yourself during worship, and he says in verse 2, I praise you for remembering me in everything and for holding to the teachings just as I passed them on to you. Now I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man who prays or prophesies with his head covered dishonors his head, and every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. It is just as though her head were shaved. And we could get into that whole conversation right there, but Paul is assuming that women are taking some kind of a public role in this church. They're praying and prophesying publicly, it appears. And he's saying to do it respectfully, to do it with honoring that the woman honors the man. He says that very clearly. And so then I think when he picks it up again in 14, well, it's not picking it up again, it's a continual thought. But when he's discussing it in chapter 14, he's reminding them of sort of your place in this, I don't like the word hierarchy, but sort of your place in the way that God designed this. And for him to say for the women to keep silent, if you go back to verses 26, it does appear that it had something to do with people who were prophesying and then people who were interpreting. And it looks like some of these women, and the way that you get the husbands tied in there is because he said, don't do this in front of everybody. Don't, and you ask your husband at home in private. And I think that's what he's saying. So he's not, I don't think he's saying that, you know, I don't think that when we said to remain silent in the churches, I don't think that means just, you know, you can't sing or anything. I don't think that it means that you can't talk. I think you just have to do it decently and in order. But that's my understanding of what was going on with the church in Corinth and what Paul's instructions were to them. You know, and I think that, I don't know how to say this, but we take a very cautionary look at that. And we don't have women in leadership positions. We don't have women speaking and praying and prophesying. You know, we don't have that in sort of our faith tradition, but other Christian traditions do. They read this a little bit differently. But I think that we've made that choice based on what we understand the principle of what Paul was saying here. And we know that the age of prophecy is over with. So for someone to be standing up and prophesying, man or woman, that's not decent and in order to stand up and say, oh, I've got a prophecy, and then somebody else is going to interpret it. That age is over.
Right.
And that's very clear.
Right.
But women obviously participated in that.
Right. So, good point. Sometimes the statements are explicit. And sometimes the statements just have to be understood from the context. Okay? And that's like the statement that Jesus made in Luke 24:49. He's with the apostles, and he makes this statement, tarry ye in the city of Jerusalem until you be endued with power from on high. So there is no explicit statement of who ye is, but from the context, I think we can determine that he's talking to the apostles. So it would be unreasonable for me to say, oh, God gave me a commandment to go wait in Jerusalem until the Holy Spirit comes. Not an explicit statement, but it has to be understood from the context. Okay. Now, commandments are almost always stated within a broader context. And the first question you have to ask yourself when you read a commandment, what covenant is this a part of? So you have a statement in Exodus 20 at verse 15, thou shalt not kill. Boom.
Or steal.
I'm sorry?
Steal.
Oh, I'm sorry, thou shalt not steal. Okay? But that's not a commandment that's given to me, because I'm not a part of that covenant. That was a commandment that God gave to Israel on Sinai, and they said, yes, we'll keep that covenant. But I'm not a part of that. Now, the same commandment is given to me in Ephesians 4, verse 28. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing that is good, so that he may have to give to him that lacketh, or that lacks. So, sometimes a commandment that's given to Israel is repeated to me, but don't quote the commandment given to Israel to tell me that I shouldn't steal. You see the point? And we tend to be guilty of doing that. Taking a commandment that was given to somebody else and saying it applies to me. Now, the command, don't steal, is Ephesians 4:28. That's the one that applies to me. to Gentiles as well as the Jews. And some commandments are given very, very broadly, like Acts 2:38, repent and be baptized, every one of you, for the remission of sins. It was given to the Jews, to their children, and to those that are afar off, even as many as the Lord our God shall call. So some commandments explicitly are intended to be given to broader constituents. And you get that in some of what the Apostle Paul wrote. For instance, concerning the collection for the saints in Jerusalem, he said, as I gave orders to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. That's an indication that what he said to the church in Galatia was to be understood as applicable to the church in Corinth as well. And what he said to Corinth is applicable to the church in Galatia as well. So sometimes the purpose is clearly stated to make this broadly a commandment. And sometimes it's not. And we have to figure out how to use it. So the question is, how do you make use of the statement that's made in Exodus 20 at verse 15, it wasn't given to you. So how do you, the things that were written aforetime are written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. I understand that that's the case, but how do you use Exodus 20 at verse 15?
I don't.
Mm-hmm. I don't either. Know. And I mean, but I think that by the same token, again, it gets back to principle. God is the same then and always, and he still is. And it doesn't mean that commandment is for me, but we teach the Ten Commandments to our children, and we study it. And it's not because we want them to obey that, but we want them to recognize the principle. We want them to recognize the authority of God. We want them to recognize that, because, I mean, you know, five of those commandments are really directed people to God in that relationship. The other five are people to people. And so we're teaching those principles to the children. And those principles, all except for keeping the Sabbath holy, every single one of them is, except the kill one, I can't get that one, is repeated in the New Testament. That doesn't mean that it's the same commandment, but the principle is repeated. So, and I think the principle of thou shalt not kill is repeated as well. I think that it's implied. That's how I deal with the principle, understanding the character and nature of God. And he is the same then as he is now. That doesn't mean he has the exact same expectations, because he gave the Israelites some very specific commandments. I mean, especially when you look back early on in their history with all of those sacrifices and stuff, and, you know, but what we learn from that is what sacrificial love is and what sacrifice means. And when he talks about us as a living sacrifice, we don't really comprehend what he means by that when he tells us that we're to be a living sacrifice, unless we go back and we understand what a living sacrifice was as opposed to a dead sacrifice. So that's why we have to study. That's why we have to, you know, get context. We can't just take one verse, you know, and that's what you're saying here. You can't just take one verse. If so, women better be covering their heads, right? And, you know, we better be silent if you take that one verse and you take it out of context, okay, I'll keep silent.
Yeah, you're good.
No, that's a good discussion. And those are the kinds of discussions that we ought to be having. Rather than to just say, this is a commandment. If it's commanded, if God commanded it, I'll do it.
Well, or the flip side of it too. Well, we're under a different covenant, a different commandment system. And so we don't have to go back and look at that. You know, I mean, I've heard Christians say that. Well, we don't have to abide by that. We don't have to look. And you know, they don't study the Old Testament. And they
for the most part.
And I mean, rightfully so in a way, because, I mean, we really need to be focusing on the New Testament and our relationship with God. But boy, how much we get from studying the Old Testament. And I get back to, if nothing else, I learn about God as the creator with his relationship with the created and those expectations. If nothing else, you know, I mean, I think it kind of all boils down to that anyway. And that's, you know, like I said, when I'm trying to teach the children the Ten Commandments, that's what I'm trying to teach them, is that God doesn't change.
Yeah, I got in trouble because I said, I don't know, I wasn't very old, and I said, right, we have to keep the Sabbath. I was a snot. You did not want to have me in class.
What a brat.
Yeah, I was a snot. It shouldn't have been, but I was.
That's okay. Well, in Matthew 19, I was just looking from a reference from where we looked at the Ten Commandments and Exodus. And in Matthew 19, it Jesus said most of those, not all of them. There's some left, but he repeated them, that those are commandments they are to keep.
That's my commandment.
Yeah, right.
Well, is he talking to us or is he talking to the Jews?
Talking to Jews, but he's talking to Jews about what's going to happen in the kingdom.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So it was a statement that was made to Jews about what
the
kingdom is going to look like.
Right, right. Yeah.
So I guess my whole point here is just be very careful.
Yes.
About how you make reference to commandments, okay? Because if you talk to somebody with very much Bible knowledge, they're going to say, you say, God commanded it, that's what I do. And the first word out of their mouth is, you keep the Sabbath, right? Well, no. You just have to, you can cut that off if you have a more nuanced idea of what a commandment is. Okay. Other questions? I forgot to advance the slides again. I was supposed to be advancing the slides. See? I forgot how to do that.
Okay. We've got our paper. We're good.
Yeah, you've got the... And some things that I added to it as I was going back through it today and looking over that and getting ready for this class. Well, I did. I added that last night. But
verse here just a second. So is... Okay, so speaking of commands...
Right.
In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10... And I haven't read the befores and afters context, none of that. But the part that has always stuck out to me, it says, I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree with one another in what you say, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and thought.
Okay.
So how does that mesh with all of us just having, like, being told, you know, let no unwholesome speech come out of your mouth? To me, unwholesome is probably completely different than somebody else's unwholesome. I mean, how can we all be perfectly united in mind and thought? Because to me, that is a command. Like I said, I haven't read before and after to get the context. That just sticks out to me that we're supposed to agree on everything. And
well, we're perfectly united. You and I agree on the most basic principle. Whatever God said, we're going to do it.
But if you understand it one way, I understand it another, we're not doing it the same.
No, we're not, but we're agreeing.
But we have to agree in what we say. And there be no, I don't know, I have a hard time getting those two. I feel like we have to agree on everything. I don't know, I just feel like we have to agree on everything. I don't know, I don't want to run us over, it was just...
Yeah, it's okay. We agree. We agree completely. The Bible is going to settle the question. Okay?
Yes, and I understand that. But don't we all have to, and I know this takes me back to the very beginning of class, I just feel like we all have to agree, or one's right, one's wrong. I don't know. This has messed with my head so much.
Well, you've been taught that. You've been taught that.
Yes.
I've been taught what?
That.
Oh.
If two people come to a different conclusion, one's right, one's wrong. Or the thing that's always appended to that is one's right, one's wrong, or maybe they're both wrong. But they're not both right.
Right. And yes, and you did correct me on that one time. And that's true. You're right, I'm right, or we're both wrong.
That was the way, that is the way that we have taught generations of people.
So we can both read the same scripture, and you can understand it one way, I can understand it another, and we can both be okay?
And yes. Still be in unity.
Yes. The point is, you have to live according to what you understand.
Right, right.
And I have to live according to what I understand. And we don't have to hash it out and quarrel about which is right and which is wrong.
Agree with one another in what you say. Agree with one another in what you
but say. What's that for a second?
It's 1 Corinthians 1, verse 10. But I don't agree that you're right.
Okay. But you agree? Do you agree that I get what I say from biblical information?
I think you're trying. And I don't even have a specific in mind.
I know. I know.
I think you're trying so hard. I do, but you're just doing
good. So hard.
And my mind is just going in circles.
Now this has been, I had a hard time at first, you know, but this has been really good. I just love this kind of conversation. So this has helped me more than anything.
These are conversations that are hard conversations to have.
They are.
And they're supposed to be hard conversations to have.
I have a note that I wrote on that verse saying in parentheses, one individual congregation. So that what this statement makes me think I wrote that because somebody said this was one congregation and not everybody. I don't know why I wrote that.
That's a way to resolve that.
I know that too.
But if we're not careful,
be careful that we're not taking a verse out of context. If you just pull verse 10 out without reading, make sure you do, especially 10 through 17. That's where he's really talking about what these Corinthians were doing.
They were trying
to identify themselves as being something other than Christians United, trying to, you know, Dean and I don't agree on everything, but I attribute to him a very pure motive in that he is really committed to following exactly what he finds in here.
He does the same to me.
Right.
And that we're both committed to that. And we can be in unity. We may not agree on every single little thing, but what we're not doing is if you look at the context here, what he's telling them is, you know, you're saying, you know, I'm a real Christian because I follow Apollos. You know what? You who follow Cephas, you're not so much. And so he's just saying, you guys get it together. You're all following Christ. You're following Christ. And you know, we're humans. We're not going to agree on every single little thing. And especially the hard stuff like this, you know, and the more you grow spiritually, the harder it gets, and it should. It should get harder because you should be doing a deeper dive and trying to understand more and more. And you're going to sit around and have conversations like this and disagree. And I think sometimes we say, well, we agree to disagree. I think that's a little bit of a cop-out. But I do think that sometimes we have to just honor the other person and say, you know, I don't see it that way, but I understand where you're coming from, that you're coming from a place of honest Bible searching, as am I, and I'm seeing it differently. But I don't think the conversation stops. I think you have to keep having that conversation.
Right.
But I think, so taking verse 10 out of that context is dangerous. Because then we say, well, there's right and wrong. You have to agree on every single item, you know, or everyone in the congregation has to agree on the same thing. No, and he's just saying, agree to be unified in Christ. That's what you're unified in. That's where the unity comes from. Now, that's what I understand the context to teach.
Yeah.
It's hard because we do see very clear what appears to be very clear statements like that, and then we take it on its own without looking. And Paul especially, his writings are just so nuanced, and they're very different from the different groups that he addresses, because he was really dealing with some stuff here with the church in Corinth. That is very specific that he didn't deal with in some of these other ones. Some of the other letters are completely different. They have different issues. What's the letter that he wrote that doesn't really, is not corrective? there's one, I can't remember what it was. Almost all of them are corrective, but I don't think any as much as 1st and 2nd Corinthians. He really has to lambast those guys. Those guys, that church was a bit of a mess. I often think, if I was a member of that congregation, would I really be thinking that this is the church? Yeah, exactly.
And as messed up as they were, Paul was with them.
Yes, and he called them brothers, and he treated them as being unified and told them that they need to be unified. And he identified with